B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Wednesday, January 18th, 2017. Hallelujah. President Obama used his unlimited powers of pardon to commute the sentence of Chelsea Manning. And it was announced yesterday, just after I completed posting my daily podcast here. In our second segment today, we'll be focusing on the confirmation hearings of Trump's wrecking crew, breezing right along for the most part, on the Senate side of Capitol Hill these days. But our top story, of course, is about the commutation of the draconian sentence, which had been issued by the court-martial to a man who was known as Bradley Manning until the day after the sentence was pronounced, and she said she'd like to be known as Chelsea. And the torture that was imposed on Manning from the beginning, through the incarceration at Quantico, the court-martial hearing at Fort Meade, and then the imprisonment at Leavenworth, has been brutal. It's been violative of the Eighth Amendment of banning cruel or unusual punishment, in my opinion. And President Obama finally did the right thing about a whistleblower yesterday. And I want to single out Kevin Gostola for special praise. You hear me refer to this young journalist frequently and the work that he does at the site that he has now called Shadowproof. But a few years back, he provided live blogging coverage of the court-martial proceedings against Bradley Manning. And he gave me frequent podcast updates. You can still find them in the archives at peterbcollins.com. And I want to encourage you to read the article that he published about the president's decision regarding Manning. I've linked to it in the show file for today's podcast. And Kevin deserves, I think, exceptional credit. This is a story that has defined him as a young journalist, and I think that he has a very bright future, as you probably know. So, Gostola notes that Manning's case was not always well known to the public. The establishment press barely showed interest in her court-martial until the case reached trial. And he notes that, for example, the New York Times occasionally sent Charlie Savage or one other reporter to cover it, but most relied on the government to update it and really only came in for the critical events that were, you know, considered suitable for corporate media coverage. Also, there were issues because the Army refused to provide a transcript of the proceedings, and the Freedom of the Press Foundation funded independent creation of transcripts. Gostola also singles out the Center for Constitutional Rights. He says, because of their work, we forced the Army's hand, and they granted us access to court documents, including decisions issued by the military judge, Colonel Denise Lind. And so I think that Kevin Gostola really deserves a parade lap here and the opportunity to take several bows, because he's been instrumental in providing, being real conduit for the coverage of the injustice that was visited upon Chelsea Manning. Now, the president also issued pardons for a number of other people. I went through the list, and there are a lot of, you know, people you've never heard of who were busted for cocaine or crack. There are people who were behind drug deals who were the patsy in the picture. And there are also a couple of well-known people who showed up. Willie McCovey, who played ball for the San Francisco Giants here for many years, ran afoul of the IRS because he had failed to report thousands of dollars in income from autographs and memorabilia. And he took a guilty plea more than 20 years ago, and President Obama issued him a pardon. Notably absent from the list yesterday was one Don E. Siegelman, the former Democratic governor of Alabama, who should have been pardoned by Obama in his first year in office. And I remain just deeply puzzled as to why Obama would not rescue this fellow Democrat who was on track to be a national player, one of the few Democrats elected in the South in the last 15 years, and he was railroaded into federal prison by Karl Rove and friends in Alabama. In an op-ed in today's Guardian, Trevor Tim notes that Chelsea Manning did the right thing and that finally, Barack Obama has too. I think that's a great way to put it. And Trevor Tim notes that Manning provided journalists an historic treasure trove of documents in the public an unparalleled window into world diplomacy. And keep in mind that the information that was spilled by Chelsea Manning did not include anything top secret. It was embarrassing, but nobody was harmed because of these disclosures and the, you know, denunciations that are coming from the right wing and the military community, claiming that she committed treason and should never, ever be, you know, freed. Well, I think that is ridiculous. And the 35-year sentence under the Espionage Act is one of the most extreme things we've seen in, you know, the persecution and prosecution of whistleblowers in my lifetime. Now, one of the deals that is kind of dangling out there is that last week, after hints were dropped that the White House was seriously considering action to ease the sentence of Chelsea Manning, Julian Assange tweeted out, "Hey, I will submit to extradition to the United States, even though I don't think it's justified or legal, if you give clemency to Chelsea Manning." Now, the White House, before this was announced, said that it played no role in their decision and that, you know, they've just kind of waved it off. But today, Melinda Taylor, who serves on Assange's legal team, said that he won't go back on his word. Everything that he has said, he's standing by. The problem is that at least as far as public knowledge, there is no basis to extradite Julian Assange to the United States. Now, it's widely believed that there is a sealed indictment from a federal grand jury that has Julian Assange's name on it. And given all of the, you know, demonization of WikiLeaks around the phony claims of Russia hacking and feeding the DNC and John Podesta content to WikiLeaks, it is the height of irony. And I heard Rush Limbaugh this morning essentially conflating, it's not accurate, but this is how he presented it to his ditto heads, that Obama pardoned WikiLeaks. That's not true, but it is a perception that some people will hold. And so this is a limbo situation. Will Donald Trump take Assange up on it, bring him to the United States, and then release him? After all, Trump owes WikiLeaks a lot, no matter who you believe hacked or delivered the information to WikiLeaks. So this is kind of cartoonish in some ways. I was going to say comical, but it's not really funny. And it does seem that Assange and the White House talked past each other. And with the clock running on the Obama administration till, what, noon on Friday, there isn't much wiggle room left. So the president held a final news conference, and while I didn't get to watch it, I've read news accounts. I saw a live blogging at the New York Times, so I have an idea of what he talked about. Most of it was not that significant. He suggested that the moment may be passing for a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, saying that his administration took the unusual step of not vetoing the UN resolution last month, criticizing the expansion of Israeli settlements illegally in Palestinian territory. He said in order to issue a wake-up call to people in the region and that the opportunity may have already slipped away. And he echoed John Kerry's recent speech, saying, "I don't see how this issue gets resolved in a way that maintains Israel as both Jewish and a democracy." And on that point, I encourage you to listen to my in-depth interview with Jonathan Ophir, who writes for Mondo Weiss, because one of the issues I talked with him about is, you know, the claim here stateside that Israel is the only democracy in the region, and that's why it's this special ally of the United States. But I consider it a theocracy, and Ophir went even further. I think his comments are pretty significant. He was asked to defend Obama at the press conference, why he gave the commutation to Chelsea Manning. He said, "Let us be clear. Chelsea Manning has served a tough prison sentence. It made sense to commute and not pardon her sentence. I feel very comfortable that justice has been served and a message has still been sent." And he dismissed the idea that this was aimed at securing the extradition of Julian Assange. "I don't pay a lot of attention to Julian Assange's tweets, so that wasn't a consideration in this decision," said Obama. Now, again, I don't have a complete list of all the topics that were brought up at this news conference. I don't think there were a lot. Obama tends to give very lengthy answers. He did praise the press, and he contrasted his demeanor and the way he manages a news conference with Trump, at least implicitly. And I fault the press for not really pinning him down on critical issues. Like, what are the next steps in Syria? Will you be arming the Kurds? And what about that pledge 8 years ago to close the prison at Guantanamo Bay? Well, our friend Andy Worthington, the British journalist and activist, has been here in the United States for the past week or so. Every day he posts on Facebook, "Obama, you've got, well, today it's 2 days left." And it appears that at least 40, 41 men will remain in a kind of legal limbo. Only 10 of them are facing charges. A handful have been cleared for release, but they couldn't find a place to send them. And there is a group of individuals, 26, who are told, "You don't need a lawyer because we're never going to file charges against you, and you don't need to pack your bags because you're never going home." And that's clearly illegal. It is in violation of international treaty obligations and American law. It is inconsistent with our values and the rule of law that we claim is such a cornerstone of the United States government. And is the greatest blight on the Obama legacy. I mentioned the issue about arming the Kurds, and apparently at a national security conference in the White House on Tuesday, the president was being presented with options, and it boils down to this. If he provides significant weapons to a group of Kurdish fighters, they will then proceed soon to try to retake Raqqa from the Islamic State. And if Obama doesn't make this decision, it could delay the Raqqa operation for many months, and the Trump administration may change plans and just offshore this whole combat operation in Syria to Russia. And in many respects, I think that's not such a bad idea. This is one of the last big-picture decisions that the president has to make or perhaps has made, and there so far is no clarification on exactly what decision was taken. Turkey, of course, deeply objects to any arming of any Kurdish groups because they believe that that'll blow back on them in the down the road somewhere. And Turkey, of course, is a big problem. It has cozied up with Russia in recent months, and they've left the United States in the dust as they've been holding peace talks trying to find a way to end the conflict in Syria. You may have heard about the Goldman Prize. It's awarded to environmentalists every year here in San Francisco. The Goldman family is linked to the Levi fortune, and they spent their philanthropy honoring people, activists in other countries. And Berta Caceres is very well known. She received the Goldman Prize last year, and shortly after that, she won it in 2015, and she was killed in her native Honduras last March after years of death threats and intimidation linked to her campaign against an internationally financed hydroelectric dam. So now we learn that a Mexican activist, Isidro Baldenegro López, a subsistence farmer and leader of the Tarahumara community in the Sierra Madre mountain region, was shot and killed at a relative's home on Sunday. He had been crusading against illegal logging. He had been hiding out for some time and thought that the coast was clear and it was safe for him to return home. And that turned out not to be true. Theresa May, who was not elected but serves as Prime Minister of Britain, gave a defining speech yesterday. And I can't help but think that Trump was at least in the back of her mind as she was trying to show the world that she's going to take the tough decisions to honor the Brexit vote and make a clean break between Britain and the European Union. She finally revealed the plans. She said Britain wants to free itself from EU governance, stop paying millions into the EU banks, but still remain friends, allies, and tariff-free trading partners with what will be pared down from 28 to a 27-nation alliance. May said, "We want to buy your goods and services, sell you ours, trade with you as freely as possible, and work with one another to make sure we're all safer, more secure, more prosperous, blah, 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 blah." There are a bunch of Brits who live in Europe and a bunch of Europeans who live in Britain who are really going to be languishing here. And it's not simply a matter that they'll have to present their passport more often. It could really complicate things like property ownership and work permits and things like that. So it's not going to be a simple, clean break. This is going to be a lengthy process, and it will be interesting to see if the Brexit virus spreads to other European members of the community. Every day I like to pause for a second and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast. People like many folks who are renewing their annual subscriptions here during the month of January, I very much appreciate that. And I have one name in front of me, but I think that person wants to remain anonymous, so I'll skip that. Let me thank Jason Ferguson, Gary Batterson, Linda Lewis, and Janet Price. They are staunch subscribers to this podcast, and that's what pays the bills here and helps me keep this going. So I encourage you to become a subscriber if you're not already. Come on over to peterbcollins.com, click menu, no matter what device or platform you're using. When you pull down that menu, click on Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page. That's where we've got the bonus books displayed for new annual subscribers in the continental U.S., and I welcome your support to my work here at peterbcollins.com. In Washington these days, the Democrats are putting up a lot of bluster. Some of them are asking some tough questions. They're challenging the Republican chairs who are trying to limit any damage that can be visited upon the Trump nominees for what I call the wrecking crew. And we have to begin this by noting the overview, the big picture, because yesterday a new study showed that 2016 was the hottest year on Earth since we started keeping records. And it is the third year in a row where we have set a new record for warming of the planet. So against that fact, we have Trump nominees who have to walk a little bit of a tightrope to win confirmation because their boss has said, in pandering to the great unwashed in this country and the resource extractors who have a profit motive in denying climate change, well, Trump has pandered to those people by saying it's a hoax that was created by China. Well, yesterday, his nominee for the Interior Secretary job, a congressman from Montana named Ryan Zinke, he said flatly, "I don't believe it's a hoax." In contradicting Trump, he cited Glacier National Park in his home state as a prime example of the efforts of climate change. And still, you know, he waffled a little bit, saying, "Well, you know, I believe it's not a hoax, but I don't know, what we can do about it or what we should do about it, blah, blah, blah." Now, the more pernicious actor is Scott Pruitt, Trump's nominee to run the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. And this is a guy who made the same statement as Zinke did. He said, quote, "I do not believe climate change is a hoax." And he stated his belief that the EPA has a very important role in regulating carbon dioxide. But when you look at Scott Pruitt's record, his actions speak much louder than these prefab words that he uttered to try to get confirmed to a job where he'll be part of the wrecking crew. And he's already said that he's only going to enforce regulations as required by law. And that means that he would gut a lot of the regulations that are promulgated just inside the EPA itself. And when you look at his actions over the years as the Attorney General of the state of Oklahoma, a big fracking state, a state where the resource extractors, the energy boys, just get their way no matter what. Well, he filed 14 lawsuits against the EPA as Attorney General of Oklahoma. And I want to thank the people at DSmog Blog I have linked to their colorful interactive graphic chart, which shows all of the connections of E. Scott Pruitt, the organizations that supported himself, like Murray Energy, Continental Resources, American Energy Partners, in PAC money that flowed to his campaigns for Attorney General of Oklahoma. Then we have his links through ALEC and other groups, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and also the Republican Attorney General's, Attorneys General Association, to the infamous Koch brothers. And so I encourage you to take a look at this, and it'll give you a very clear understanding of who Scott Pruitt is. And he may mouth the words that climate change is not a hoax, but he will pursue actions in direct contradiction of that if he is confirmed. And so far, there may be one withdrawal. I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy who runs Carl's Jr. and who's been named the nominee for Secretary of Labor, he seems to be having second thoughts about whether he wants to fully disclose and whether he wants the job. But it appears that everybody else, including Jeff Sessions, Rex Tillerson, that they will be confirmed. And we're seeing all this posturing from the Democrats, and they're demanding further commitments of recusal from Sessions and people like that. But for the most part, it's all talk, a lot of smoke, and very little substantive action. So let's look at Betsy DeVos. All right, Bernie Sanders asked her point blank, did she get this job because of all the money her family has contributed to Trump and to other Republican campaigns over the years? And her answer was, well, matter of fact, I think there would be that possibility. No, she bought this job. She has no experience as an administrator. She doesn't even know about some of the loan programs the Department of Education runs. And so when she was asked if guns belong on school campuses by Chris Murphy, the Democratic senator from Connecticut, she said, well, I'll do whatever Trump says. And Murphy asked DeVos if she would back a proposal, which Trump campaigned on, to ban gun-free school zones. That's right. He wants to allow guns on campus. And she said, well, I would imagine that there is probably a gun in some schools, like in Wyoming, to protect the students from potential grizzlies. So we're going to build policy nationwide based on a rural school where a grizzly bear once got on campus. The idea that the only way we need guns is to protect people from wild animals. And of course, I don't believe we need guns on campus or armed security guards. I think it will only compound the problems. But when pressed by Murphy, she said, I will support with the president-elect does. And that's not even English from a woman who wants to be Secretary of Education. Now, Jeremy Scahill, the talented muckraker who now works at The Intercept, he knows the DeVos family fairly well. And the reason is that Betsy DeVos has a brother, the infamous mercenary founder of Blackwater, Eric Prince. And the Prince family is wealthy. They merged into the DeVos family. That's Amway. They're all based in Michigan. Holland, which is on the coast there, on the west side of Michigan, on Lake Michigan. And Scahill really takes her down. He describes her long public record, religious Christian zealot, doesn't believe in actual separation of church and state, wants public monies funneled into religious schools, and has supported bigoted groups with family foundation money. So one of the things that really caught Scahill's attention as he was watching her hearing is that she denied being a member of the board of directors of the Prince Foundation. That's not Prince, the musician who died last year. The Prince family, that's her maiden name, they're very wealthy. The Prince Foundation gave $5 million to James Dobson's Focus on the Family. That's the right-wing group from Colorado Springs that promotes Bible thumping and gay bashing. And at the hearing yesterday, she said that she has nothing to do with the contributions from the Prince Foundation. and she was asked directly if she was on the board of her mother's foundation during the period in which large donations were made to focus on the family, and she said no. But Scahill went on the web, pulled up the 990 tax documents of the Prince Foundation, and found that she's clearly listed as a vice president of the foundation's board, at least as recently as 2014. And so Scahill says he started a tweet storm. This was picked up by members of the Senate, who then pressed her more carefully on that, and she said, oh, that's just a clerical error. And who are you going to believe? Scahill also has a piece published the day before. Do I have that right? They published pretty close together about Eric Prince. It's up at The Intercept. I've linked to both of these articles in the show file for today's podcast. And yes, it was Tuesday that Scahill published a piece about Eric Prince and the former founder of Blackwater, who has many bizarre schemes that he either advocates or promotes. Well, Eric Prince has been giving advice to Donald Trump and to his advisor, Steve Bannon. And Prince was a guest frequently on Breitbart News when Steve Bannon was there. He called for a new version of the Phoenix program, the CIA assassination op that we had back during the Vietnam War, to focus on the Islamic State. And he is a real hardliner on what he calls Islamic fascism. Prince now heads up a Hong Kong-based company called Frontier Services Group, and he's trying to build a private air force for hire. He has close ties to Chinese intelligence. I mean, this is pretty devastating stuff, and that's part of the Trump team. Read all about it if you follow the links at peterbcollins.com. A couple of more quickies here. The Obama administration has written 275 briefing papers for the incoming Trump administration's National Security Council, including 1,000 pages of classified material. And nobody on the Obama side knows whether anybody on the Trump side has actually read any of this stuff. The Trump transition at the National Security Council is on its third director. Let's see what his name is. Keith Kellogg, a retired three-star Army general. And so it's been a rocky transition. And this is the group that's supposed to be able to hit the ground running right after Trump lifts his hand from the Bibles that he is taking his oath on. And it doesn't appear that they are ready for prime time. And finally today, Tom Price, who is the demolition expert being brought in to take down Obamacare, is confronting the facts. The Congressional Budget Office, or somebody like that, yeah, the CBO, issued a report that in year one of repeal of the Affordable Care Act, 18 million people would lose their insurance. Over 10 years, that number would grow to 32 million. And Tom Price says, well, nobody's interested in pulling the rug out on your health care coverage. He said, one of the most important things we need to convey to the American people is that nobody's interested in pulling the rug out from under anybody. We believe that it's absolutely imperative that individuals that have health coverage be able to keep health coverage and move, hopefully, to greater choices and opportunities for them to gain the kind of coverage that they want for themselves and for their families. Now, the opportunity to buy health insurance is very different from being able to afford health insurance. And that's a point that was driven home by Senator Bernie Sanders. Thanks for joining me today for my news and comment podcast. It's fed daily to YouTube. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.